Testing. Blah, 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 blah. Ready, set, go.
It's time for the Coach Amy and Coach Liz Show,
a podcast for endurance athletes by two athletes, two coaches, and a physical therapist.
We are your hosts, Coach Amy
and Coach Liz,
coming to you from
Kansas City. Welcome back. So today we're going to be talking about compression garments.
like compression socks and compression sleeves, because athletes are always, my athletes and patients are always asking me, like, do they work? So I think we should talk about that. And I was recently interviewed by Runner's World, which I love to say, like, I was
interviewed that's very
by Runner's World, which it is super fun to be asked my opinion. I love that. And of course, you know, they interview me, ask you lots and lots of questions, and then they edit that down and they fit it into their article for whatever, like, the purpose of their, you know, story was about, and this one was about calf sleeves in particular.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I read it and it's good. And they ask other people's opinions.
Sure.
So lovely. But then I was like, yeah, but you left out all this other stuff that I wanted to share with people. So I feel like our audience should get the full lowdown on compression socks versus compression sleeves. Do they work? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But before we get into that,
oh gosh,
since we last recorded, you did a race called Pike's Peak Ascent.
I did.
Which, tell everyone what that is, because not everyone knows, like, how far that is or how that goes.
So, Pike's Peak Ascent is a race that's obviously out in Colorado, and it's up Pike's Peak, which is a 14er in Colorado. It's a mountain. And, you know, I don't want to use the word run. I feel like that's like a hefty, but it is. It's a marathon. It's a half marathon up Pike's Peak mountain.
So it's like a half up and a half down for a full?
So we just did the ascent. I did the ascent. You go up half marathon up the mountain, and then the following day they actually have a full marathon. So I did have an athlete that went all the way up and then came back down.
Mm-hmm.
I just did the ascent. I just went up and it was great. It was great. I mean, it was very hard.
Just went up.
Well, like, it was hard.
Yeah,
it was hard. But it was really fun. And I actually want to talk about the word fun. I just want to put in a little note about the word fun for endurance sports, because I've had a lot of time to think about that word this year. Because, you know, I mean, the past 15 years, I was really dialed into training, and, like, not that training wasn't fun, but, I mean, Ironman, I was, you know, I was pretty focused. I really didn't ever miss workouts. Like, it was very, it wasn't a tea party, I'll say. And I feel like, you know, this year I've kind of taken a step back in doing some races that are just a little bit more relaxed. But one of the things that I've really noticed about the word fun in endurance sport, I feel like it's kind of a gremlin in sheep's clothing, you know?
Why?
Well, because because I have athletes, and I see this a lot. Like, people will sit down at the start of the season and say, you know, what are our goals for the season? What are your goals for the race? And you know, come up with a plan, but then maybe training doesn't go as they wanted, or life gets in the way, or they get scared, and we get closer to a race, and then we sit down and make our race plan, all of a sudden it's just, I want to just do the race for fun. And what I find with that is that there's a lot of unaddressed angst underneath that. And so it's not, you know, so we're using it to sort of brush things under the rug. And instead of looking at, like, you know, what were our goals and what happened and how do we reassess and, like, work through and make more appropriate goals and work through some of the emotions and angst that goes with that, we say, oh, I'm just going to do it for fun. And, like, meanwhile, we're clenching our jaw and we're, you know, our shoulders and our ears, and, like, there's nothing really fun about it because we're really stressed about, you know, the fact that we don't feel prepared and we haven't then set accurate goals. And I feel like it really snowballs. And especially in the time of social media and, like, live athlete tracking, I think people, and understandably, we get very angsty about, like, the perception of other people and how our races go. And, like, that's a whole separate podcast in terms of dealing with that. But I do think that we see these posts where people are like, it's just for fun, or it's just this. And underneath all of that is really where, if you want to dive into the mental side of, like, how you put together a race and, like, mentally manage that, you've got to dive a little deeper than just saying it's for fun. And I think we get ourselves into a lot of trouble. I think that's where a lot of race angst comes from, because we haven't really looked at that and dove into that. And so I just felt like, you know, I really did do Pike's Peak for fun, and my training reflected that, and my goals reflected that, and I wasn't anxious about saying it was for fun.
Yeah.
And it was a joy. It was really, really hard.
Because it was truly, your goal was to have fun.
It really was.
You trained that way, and then that's how you executed it.
It was. And, like, honestly, my only two goals were to not trip so many times that I ended up with a permanent injury. Like, really.
Did you trip?
I did not trip once, but I will get to why. Like, there's a reason why.
Okay,
but
why?
That's a miracle. Because we swiftly hiked the whole thing. It was a survival hike. It was not a run, you know? I mean, so if I was running, I feel like there are little goblins on the trails that, you know, reach up and tie my shoelaces together. But so I didn't fall once, which is great. And I did not have an injury. And then I thought it was really cool if we would make the cutoff.
And, you know, and you made the cutoff.
We made the cutoff.
Good. And you got to the, what is the cutoff, by the way?
Oh my gosh. It's 6.5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the hardest thing about this?
That's a great question. I mean, I would say physically, like, I mean, of course, not knowing what to expect, which was fine, but it was really interesting the difference at, as you got higher up the altitude and what it did to your breathing. And like, you know, I mean, so really like the last 2 miles each took, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't watching my watch, but it was like 30 to 45 minutes probably for each last 2 miles. So like the last 2 miles were like, you know, it's probably like an hour and a half, you know, because you can't breathe.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can't, you know, there's lots of things that go into it, but it was really, it was fun. And, you know, it's 11% grade average the whole way up. And, you know, there's single tracks of going around people. And so it just really, like, you know, it's not running.
For did you feel someone like you were like in nature? Like,
yes.
Okay. And yes, so what did beautiful. You see at the top? What happens when you get to the top?
I mean, so, well, you're kind of in the snow. And so you're like trying not to fall off the side of the mountain, or like, you know, people are like sitting on the side and you just want to make sure that no one's like, they don't need medical attention. You're like, and then you get to the top and like the views are beautiful, and they actually have this like little sign. If you ever watched any of the documentaries on like people who like climb Everest, and they have like the little flag at the top. And so it's like, you know, I wanted to pretend like I was climbing Everest. I was not. It was Pike's Peak, but it was my personal Everest.
It was your Everest.
That's my Everest.
And there were no aliens at the top?
There were no aliens at the top. No, they have this gorgeous like, you know, news center that they built. And so we got hot cocoa. I don't know how they built the center.
Fun.
But it's beautiful. And it's so well organized, and all the volunteers were super nice. And, you know, I mean, we swiftly hiked, and that's really what I could do. I don't know that I can imagine running up that without being able to train in those conditions.
Yeah, right. If you live out there and you can,
I mean,
and adapt
like,
and stuff. Yeah.
But you are just, I mean, the people that win that thing, I mean, they are next level humans. I don't know what they're doing.
Superhuman.
Superhumans. Yes. Like their lungs must just be the most efficient. Anyway, I would highly recommend it to, you know, even if you're not like, even if you don't really like running, like we didn't really run. It was like a swift hike.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
I'm glad you met your goals.
Thanks.
And had that fun experience.
Yeah. Let's have a conversation about compression socks.
Yes. And audience, this is take two.
Oh my God.
On a conversation about compression socks, because we've learned something about casting that it's a little bit like training. You need to be prepared.
Oh my God.
So we were prepared for many of our earlier podcasts, and then we got confident with our quickies, and we're like, ooh, just hit the record, chat, no editing, went perfectly.
We're obviously naturals. It's so great.
Yeah, flying by the seat of our pants. But for this one, we realized as we got talking about it that there was a lot of information, and it warranted a wee bit more organization to present it. So here we go on our second attempt.
Yes. I mean, you know, there's been a learning curve, and it requires some humility, but it does create some funny outtakes. So we have shared one with you guys at the end if you make it to the end.
Yeah, we make it through all our droll. Okay, so what is the big deal about compression socks?
Well, I think we all just want to know if they help.
I often get this question from, you know, athletes and patients, like, do these work? And my first way of responding to that is to ask the question right back, do you think they work? Are they working for you? And if an athlete says, oh, yeah, it does, then I say, great, then it does help. Because we know as athletes ourselves and as coaches how much the mental game holds weight. So if it's helping you in your head, then, you know, then definitely wear them.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the actual physical, you know, benefits, there's little evidence to support
that the compression socks are helping with your performance, at least not directly. Mm. So they will not make you run faster.
Yeah.
They will not boost your endurance. And they're not going to fix your nagging injury so that you can run further or faster. But they may indirectly help your performance by boosting recovery, which is where socks, where the compression benefits us the most. And they do so by encouraging promoting blood flow and lymph flow.
Tell us what lymph is and what does it do in the body? Because I feel like it serves a very important function in both, you know, medical healing, but also in just recovery from performance and training.
It's kind of like the sewer system for your body. That's an analogy I ran across somewhere. So the lymph system, it collects and filters the waste products that result from illnesses, but also injury. Okay. So when micro tearing is occurring, with even just with training, like the normal amount, with training or racing, and with sports injuries, when those occur, we rely on the lymph system to help us recover.
And so the visual that I have of the lymph system, to give people kind of a visual of what we're talking about, when you look, if you've ever looked at a picture of the body and like looked at all, like something that visual, that shows like all of the veins and the blood vessels that kind of go through the body, and you can see them running throughout the entire body, right?
Yep.
When you look at a picture of the lymph system, it looks very similar. Like the lymph system has like a network that runs throughout the entire body, right? So it's running through like all of our muscles and our organs, and that's how it's like moving out the waste, it right? Works. So it has like a big highway system that is that.
Yes. The reason it runs along the blood vessels is because it works very much in tandem with them.
Yes.
But what's different about the lymph system, it's a drainage pump system that works only in one direction.
Oh, that's so interesting. So is that moving towards the heart?
Yep. It indirectly goes to the heart
when
it's working with the blood vessels. This research article, "The Neglected Leg Lymphatic Vascular Changes in the Pathomechanism of Delayed Onset Muscle Soreness in Runners."
I'm sorry, what? Come again?
That is a long way to say. These researchers, Zaleska Olzowski, I'm butchering the names. It's not fair. Okay. We will have it in the show notes.
Okay, but what are they saying?
Okay, so what they're saying is their results show that 3 to 5 days after a run, okay, not only muscles, but also skin and other tissues reveal fluid accumulation.
Okay.
So an overload bringing about functional lymphatic transport insufficiency.
Okay.
Time out. I'll tell you what it is. So in other words, the sewer system gets a blockage. Okay. So the researchers suggest that this may be an additional factor responsible for delayed onset muscle soreness. But let's just think about how does this apply to us? What we should think about is our lymph system is being affected by our training. That's the takeaway message there.
Okay. I'm confused. So I'm just going to, because after we exercise, doesn't the lymph system clean out what is like the accumulation of waste in our muscles? Like we break them down, we've done all of this hard stuff, we've got waste accumulating. And isn't the lymph system like what takes that stuff away?
It's yes. What they're saying here is that they're noticing, right, that 3 to 5 days after this run or this training workout, the system is working really hard.
Okay. The compression socks might come in terms of helping that system. So it's not like the system is shut down. It's just that it's working really hard.
Right. It's not a complete blockage.
Okay.
And they're saying, hey, that might be why. A contribution why we feel that delayed onset muscle soreness.
So let's
do some things to promote the recovery of the lymph system as well.
Okay.
So, and then to add another layer on top of this.
Yeah.
As we age, the lymphatic system or that pump can break down or become less efficient.
So that's why as we get older, we don't necessarily feel like we recover as fast.
Yes. So okay. Endurance athletes over 40 should really consider this. Recovery from injury and training takes longer and needs some assistance. And we've talked about that before, but here we're just relating it to, hey, this other part of our body system, our ability to, our lymph system's ability to help us with this micro tearing and training is going to, again, be less effective as we age.
So in addition, you know, we're talking about compression stuff, but if we're talking here about the idea that our lymph system, which helps us recover, is, you know, becomes less effective as we get older, are there other things that we can do to help, you know, promote that recovery of via, like help support our lymph system in what it's trying to do for us?
Yes. So one of my favorite things is dry needling. So if you're one of those athletes who can afford the time and the money to go in for the type of physical therapy that is for recovery, you can do needling. Lymph massage.
Lymph massage. Hello, yeah, lymph massage is interesting.
And it's a special kind
of
massage.
It's a very special kind of massage. It's very
and
different.
Then recovery exercises. So when we've talked about in our recovery podcast, we talk about what are the things you can do to what kinds of exercises help with recovery, like walking, swimming is especially good, or water aerobics, not necessarily like huge, you know, walking in the water or swimming, because it's especially beneficial to the lymph system because of the pressure of the water as well.
Oh, look at that.
Oh my God. So there we go.
So that gentle movement, is that just kind of helping, like encouraging, I mean, just like when we do gentle movement and it sort of increases our blood flow a little bit, like that gentle movement, it's also sort of helping increase that lymph flow a little bit. So it's like just kind of helping it flush a little bit.
Right. Okay. Especially with that water giving that pressure.
Yeah.
And then of course the graduated compression garments, those graduated compression socks that we're talking about in this podcast today. So there's a couple of other links to aging and lymph, you know, what are some kinds of recoveries that can help the lymph system? All of those articles will be in our show notes if you're interested in learning more information.
Yeah, including the one with the article title that's 5 minutes long.
It was really good.
It is fascinating.
Check it out.
Okay, so back to socks.
Anytime that we can improve blood flow and lymph flow and promote that, which is what the compression socks do, then we're going to boost our recovery, which if you have not listened to our recovery manifesto, please go back. Episodes 3 through 5 are all about that.
It will boost your performance, ultimately.
It will ultimately boost your performance. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because it'll allow you to continue training. Yeah. It'll allow you to recover from the race and get back to training. So,
But so how do they work, though? That's the thing.
Okay. So the garments have a pressure gradient. So the pressure at your toes, and I'm promoting compression socks over sleeves, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
But the pressure down at your toes is higher. And then as it goes up towards your knee, it's becoming less and less and less. So there's this pressure gradient where, again, it's higher at your toes. It gets less as it goes up towards your knee. And that's going to promote blood flow and lymph flow against gravity to go back to your heart.
Oh.
And the amount of pressure is important because when you're looking at the kind of sock that you want to purchase, you're looking at one that is around 20 to 30 millimeters of mercury.
Okay.
So in comparison to some brands that you might find at a sporting goods store, it could be like 15 millimeters of mercury. It may not be as adequate.
Well, and so that's a good question because, you know, I had not really seen medical grade compression garments until my sister did have cancer. And then I was like, well, these are quite different than like what I see people wearing. So where do you recommend, I mean, where should, if we want ones that are actually effective, where do you get them?
Okay, so that's such a good question. When I was doing some research for that Runner's World article, you know, I walked into, there's a place in town where I send people for medical grade items, and they sell run socks there, the compression socks there. And the brand that they recommended and that I like as well is CEP, and we'll have that in our show notes for you. We'll have a link To their website, but there's you'll find them in sporting goods stores too. They're kind of all over. But
so is the main thing to look at the pressure.
The millimeters per mercury. Okay. So there's probably a lot of other brands out there. Sure. And but you want it made out of good quality material.
Sure.
We don't promote products on our show, but that's one that, sure. you know, we recommend. We're not sure. getting paid to.
No.
We're not getting paid. but anyway, that's a place to start.
Okay.
Okay. So.
And then, well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, when should you wear them? I mean, you see people wearing them in all sorts of scenarios. Perhaps out to dinner with the family or, you know, before a race, after a race. Is it a fashion item?
It's not boosting performance per se. So, wearing them during a race, you know, if it's giving you that mental boost, it's comfortable, it feels good to you, and you feel like it's helping you, then oh my gosh, by all means, wear them during the race.
Yeah.
But they are most effective after races or long runs and rides because they promote recovery and prevent blood clots.
Blood clots? Wait,
I know it's scary. It's
you just threw that in there, like
I know, but like man, just a blood clot. It's relatively rare, but they do happen, and they can occur in young, old, experienced, and inexperienced endurance athletes. So, it really comes into play, especially when an athlete is not moving much after a race, like. Oh my gosh, how many times have you like hopped in a car after a race or into an airplane soon after? And or you have people that are just like, okay, I did it. I achieved it. And now I'm going to lay on the couch. I'm going to go home and just lay on the couch. So if you are inactive and then you throw some dehydration in there and some micro tearing of the muscles, which is occurring on these longer efforts, then you have a perfect storm for a blood clot. And in the medical world, we refer to these clots that occur in the calf as deep vein thrombosis, or DVT for short. And it causes severe pain in the calf because pressure will build up in the lower leg. And doctors and athletes can mistake the symptoms of a DVT for a calf injury, you know. Mm. And the concern here is that if you miss that, if that clot dislodges, it can become what's called a pulmonary embolism. And this is where the clot goes to your lungs. And that's a life-threatening emergency.
Mm. Okay, so just, you know, let's talk about what are the signs and symptoms of the DVT or the blood clot in the legs. And then sort of talk about that in the context of what it's like to just have sore calves.
Okay, yes, because you don't want to be like totally freaked out.
Yeah.
But you also want to be aware.
Yeah.
So the signs and symptoms of a deep vein thrombosis, and it's not just one or the other, but especially if you have more than one of these, swelling of the leg.
Okay. So, is it spot-specific swelling, or it's like would be the whole leg is swollen?
I would watch for the entire calf.
Okay.
Okay, so calf swelling, okay. Leg pain, cramping, or soreness, that is pretty severe.
Okay.
We're talking like not just like 3 or 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Right. But pretty severe.
Okay.
Change in skin color
of the leg. Oh, okay.
So redness or purpley. And you know, we all have different skin colors. So it's just like a change. It's a difference.
Okay.
But it doesn't that may not be present. Okay.
Oh, okay. So you can have it's not always present.
Exactly.
Okay.
So don't just be like, oh, well, it's not change in color. Yeah. Never mind.
Okay.
A feeling of warmth on the affected leg. So like, and sometimes you can't tell on your own, but if someone were to touch it and it feels quite a bit warmer on that side or something. So those are symptoms that a deep vein thrombosis might be present. Versus again, that sort of like, it's equal on both sides, you know, both sides are kind of just that normal workout soreness feeling.
Yeah.
It's not painful to walk every step.
Yeah.
And it's equal on both sides. Yeah. That would probably be more like just your regular delayed onset muscle soreness.
Okay. If you suspect you have a clot in your leg, what should you do?
Yeah, so we will go. You could call your family practice doc if they're not available because it's after hours. I would go to the urgent care or even the emergency room, which, oh my gosh, when someone says it, you're like, oh,
I know.
But you know what? It's better to be safe than sorry.
So it's something that needs like an immediate.
It needs immediate attention.
Okay.
Yes.
And then what do they do when you get there?
Right. So if they, okay. So they will assess it physically and based on this history, like, oh my gosh, this is a perfect storm setup where you just ran a race.
Yeah.
You're possibly dehydrated with that. Oh, you've also been traveling or inactive for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Then they will do some testing. Usually it's a Doppler or sonogram or ultrasound to see if there is a blood clot in the leg.
Okay.
And if there is, it's easily treatable. They give you blood thinners. So it's just, it's very treatable.
Okay. So but the blood thinners dissolve that clot and that's what, okay.
But if left untreated, you know,
it then the risk of that is that then it dislodges and it maybe goes to your lungs or someplace else where it causes, where we don't want blood clots.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Because in that scenario, that is a life-threatening condition.
Okay.
And so if you say you're having this calf soreness and you haven't gone, you know, this excessive calf soreness, these signs of the deep vein thrombosis, and you haven't gone to the doctor or the urgent care emergency room, and you start experiencing some of the symptoms of pulmonary embolism, which would be sudden shortness of breath.
So wait, so pulmonary embolism is when the clot from your leg has dislodged and moved to your lungs, just so we're clear on that. Okay.
Yes. So these would be the signs. So this is now, we're in a life-threatening state right now. This is like the call to 911 at this point.
And what are the...
The symptoms of that, and we'll have these all in the show notes for you, but is sudden shortness of breath, chest pain or discomfort that worsens when you take a deep breath or when you cough, feeling lightheaded or dizzy, fainting, rapid, you know, pulse or heart rate, rapid breathing or coughing up blood. I mean, these are all kind of things that if you started to have them, you'd be like, oh gosh, something seriously is wrong.
That's true.
But let's connect it. Be aware of those things.
Yeah.
When you've had this perfect, you've had this perfect storm.
Yeah.
You are having some really bad calf soreness, and then you start to experience these other things, and we know it's gotten critical.
Sure. So, what can we do to prevent the clots?
So, the best way to prevent a blood clot and a deep vein or a deep vein thrombosis is movement. So, like a recovery walk. Obviously, hydration. If you haven't listened to our hydration podcast, that's a good one. But compression socks can help prevent this by encouraging blood flow. But if you have to get on a plane or hop in a car to go home, I recommend that you get up and walk around the cabin or make frequent stops on your drive to get up and get the legs moving. And elevate them when you're sitting down if you can. And then probably my favorite thing is to perform range of motion activities or ankle movements with your ankles, like little ankle circles, or you can move your feet and kind of write the alphabet with your feet, you know, in the air. All those things together will help prevent.
Yeah, prevent those. And I will say that even the moving those ankles like that, it just, you're not quite as sore when you go to stand up. Sometimes that's nice just to kind of move those ankles a little bit so you don't, you know, you stand up after something like that and it just feels like,
like 1,000 years old. And all of the things that are going to prevent a blood clot also help prevent the delayed onset muscle soreness.
Well, look at that.
Oh, bum, bum.
Well, so we know what they do, but I feel like, compression garments are sort of a catch-all. What do they not do?
Okay.
I think it's good to specify that.
Yeah, because we talked about them, like, maybe not really boosting your performance per se, except for indirectly through recovery. But what they don't do is they do not prevent or cure an injury.
Oh.
That is so...
Are you so... Really?
Yeah, they do not do that.
They're
so
magic socks.
They're not magic. And unfortunately, they can give an athlete a false sense of security. Like, this is going to prevent an injury or this is going to help me continue to run while I'm injured.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're injured.
Do we do that? Is that what we do?
Oh, my God. We're not going to.
Tape it up. Tape it back on.
Right. Glue it together. The compression socks, this is going to help pull me through the rest of my training cycle.
But it could actually worsen things because you're assuming that it's helping you, and it'll make you think that you can get through the rest of the training cycle. So it's not going to cure tendonitis. It's not going to magically knit together your calf strain or your tear. So the issue's bigger than a pair of socks. So an injured athlete should be seeking medical attention and treatment.
Oh my gosh.
Taking
lots of Tylenol and Advil isn't the way to go.
No,
I know.
Please, no. but that kind of leads me to also, like, so if you read the Runner's World article, which I encourage you to do, I think there's some good information in there. It quotes me as saying they can't hurt. Wait, well, and when in context, it was like, if it helps your mental state, that's great. But actually, they can hurt you. It's rare, but there are a few instances where compression socks can cause harm. And the article does go into, hey, you should probably have a compression sock that fits correctly. And they do talk about fit in there, which is great, because if it is not fitting, it's going to compress in the wrong areas. So measurement is important, and you know, people would think, oh, well, I'm just going to go by my shoe size or my sock size.
Right.
Right. Because when you walk into your sporting goods store and you're looking at the boxes, you're like, oh, I'm a medium or whatever.
Sure.
But it should be based on your calf size, because you and I both know there's some people with some smaller calves.
Yeah.
And there's some people with some really large, meaty, beautiful calves.
Yeah.
And so say that the larger calf person is going with their shoe size, that compression is going to be too great at the calves, or too little if they've got smaller calves for their shoe size. So whatever brand you choose, it should be asking you what your calf size is in order to figure it out. So if that doesn't include it on the box, move on to another.
So do you measure your circumference?
You measure the circumference of your calf, and it should tell you on whatever website or manufacturer that you're looking into, it should be asking you that. So if they don't ask you that, then you might need to look else, you know, for a different brand.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that article was about compression sleeves, which, okay, great. But unfortunately, if you think about what we've been talking about this entire podcast about how the compression socks work,
yeah,
a sleeve starts at your ankle. So it's going to compress at your ankle and cut off the circulation. So at that part. And so we want it to flow all the way from the toes up to the knee.
Okay.
So I think that a compression sock would be better when we're talking about recovery, prevention of blood clots, that kind of thing. Should be a sock versus a sleeve.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then there's just besides fit, there's one other thing I want to mention, because there's some contraindications to wearing compression socks. You know, diabetics with neuropathy, most diabetics with neuropathy and foot drop, you know, and those kind of, that severe of stuff are usually not running endurance sport. But there is a condition called chronic exertional compartment syndrome. Have you heard of that? Do you know what that is?
I have, yeah.
As I think you know some athletes who have like had surgery for that before. But this medical condition does affect athletes and causes calf cramping, pain, numbness, and tingling, and it's often underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed as like tendonitis or Achilles tendonitis or calf strain. If you know you suffer from this, or if you think you might suffer from this, your go-to would be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to wear compression socks or compression sleeves because it's going to help. When actually it's contraindicated. So it's and I'll, I have a blog post that I'm going to write. We'll put the link to that in the show notes about this condition so you can learn more about it. But it is too much compression and of the fascia around the muscles. So it's minimizing blood flow and lymph flow and all of those things and pressing on the nerves. and if we add a compression sock to that, we're just adding more compression.
Oh, gosh,
so it would be one of those instances where you might think, oh, my friend is wearing these for their calf pain or calf strain, but they have compartment syndrome and then they're wearing the sock. So that would make it worse.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't feel good. It wouldn't be helpful. You would kind of know, but it would just be contraindicated for that condition. So,
I think it's good. I think it's something that a lot of people use, and it's, it can be confusing. It's hard to know what, you know, is gimmicky and what actually is helpful. So,
right.
This is good.
Yeah. I definitely would, I would invest in a pair and, or a couple of pairs and have them, especially for post-race and post-race travel.
And so, peeps, we've come to the close of this really long compression con.
Oh, my gosh.
We will have a lot of information in our show notes. So if you would like to go find more information on the research articles or any sort of blog posts and stuff, they'll be out there.
But, you know, so they're super common. We see people wearing compression socks all the time. And I'm always asking my athletes who wear them when they wear them and why. And I get a whole lot of different answers. And I would love to know from you guys when you wear them and why you wear them. Because it's really, it's fascinating to me that there's like, there's just so many different reasons people are using them.
And then for your enjoyment and good, some good laughs, here's an outtake. You wouldn't, if you suspect a blood clot, you would want to...
Go on.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. And remember,
we are in this together. Until next time.